They said he was dangerous, not because of weapons, but because of vision. The UNIA was growing too fast, too global, too unified, too black. So the Empire struck back. The FBI infiltrated meetings, planted spies, forged letters. They didn't just watch, they sabotaged. And when they couldn't stop the movement, they tried to destroy its leader. Marcus Garvey was put on trial, convicted, imprisoned, deported, not for violence, but for daring to organize black freedom across continents. This isn't just a story of sabotage. It's the blueprint of how power reacts when the oppressed start to govern themselves. If you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. The Empire Strikes Back, FBI, sabotage, and the criminalization of a movement. When black power begins to organize, Empire calls it a crime. The movement was growing. Too fast. Too global. Too powerful. By the early 1920s, the UNIA was no longer a small Pan-African experiment. It was a global phenomenon. It had its own flag, its own constitution, its own newspaper, nurses, legions, courts, and ships. It had built a black government in exile, and that government had millions of citizens. To the empires of the world, this was war. Not the kind fought with guns. The kind fought with ideas, with vision, with identity. And that made the UNIA more dangerous than any army. J. Edgar Hoover and the Bureau of Obsession. In Washington, D.C., a young Justice Department lawyer named J. Edgar Hoover took notice. He was ambitious, calculating, and obsessed with internal threats. But none disturbed him more than Marcus Garvey. In Garvey, he saw a man not just rallying black people, but organizing them. Not just speaking out, but building institutions. Creating schools, creating jobs, naming enemies. All with charisma that rivaled world leaders. Hoover feared what Garvey represented. A black man commanding global loyalty, promoting race pride, and speaking openly of independence from colonial powers. So Hoover wrote, "He is a notorious Negro agitator. His activities must be watched carefully." That watching turned into full-scale surveillance. Under Hoover's guidance, the Bureau of Investigation, the predecessor of the FBI, opened a file on Garvey. Dozens of black informants were recruited. UNIA meetings were bugged. Personal letters were intercepted. Leaders were tailed. It was one of the first major political surveillance operations in American history. And its target was not a criminal. Its target was a vision. Infiltration, fabrication, and the mail fraud trap. Unable to find evidence of violence or incitement, the Bureau shifted strategy. If they couldn't stop the UNIA, they'd cripple it from within. They sent informants like James Wormley Jones, the first black FBI agent, to infiltrate the highest levels of the organization. Others posed as supporters, then reported back every misstep and internal disagreement. Eventually, the government found its opening, not in political rebellion, but in paperwork. They accused Garvey of mail fraud, charging him with misleading investors about the Black Star Line's assets. The case hinged on a brochure that advertised a ship the line hadn't yet fully secured. The details were flimsy. The damage was minimal, but it was enough. In 1923, after a public trial marred by racial bias and fabricated evidence, Garvey was convicted. He was sentenced to 5 years in prison. The movement's founder, the man who had once addressed 25,000 people in Madison Square Garden, was now behind bars. And the empire had struck its first major blow. Divide, dismantle, deport. Garvey's imprisonment had a chilling effect. The UNIA fractured under internal disputes, leadership challenges, and relentless pressure from authorities. Chapters in the Caribbean and Africa were raided. Publications were halted. The Negro world was increasingly censored. UNIA members faced job loss, public harassment, and community ostracism. In 1927, after serving 2 years, Garvey was released, but not to freedom. He was deported to Jamaica. A citizen of the British Empire, he was barred from re-entering the United States. It was exile in every sense, geographic, political, and symbolic. The movement that had once stretched across oceans was now leaderless in its most active territories. And yet it did not die. The blueprint that couldn't be burned. Though the UNIA lost momentum in the United States, it continued in Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. In Liberia, its ideas influenced land reclamation efforts. In Ghana, its flag and philosophy became the blueprint for independence. In Jamaica, Its community halls still stood as testaments to self-reliance. The empire had won the battle, but the idea had survived the war. What they didn't understand was this. You can imprison a man. You can shut down an office. You can burn a newspaper. But you can't kill a blueprint that lives in the minds of millions. The real threat wasn't Garvey. It was the fact that millions believed him. They believed they were a people. They believed they had a right to rule themselves. They believed they didn't need to beg for freedom. They could build it. Final reflection. This was not just sabotage. It was a warning that anytime black people begin to organize globally, anytime we create structure, identity, defense, and narrative, the systems of empire will rise, not in fear of violence, but in fear of vision. The story of the Unia's criminalization is not unique. It is a blueprint repeated across time. In every black movement that dares to build something permanent, empire responds the same way. With silence, then scrutiny, then sabotage. But what the empire never learns is that vision, once ignited, cannot be unseen. It spreads. It survives. It waits. Until one day, it rises again.